Yes, thank you very much for the introduction, and also this presentation kind of naturally extends the poster presentation that Alan's introduced. So my name is Andrejs Pupurs, I'm a senior researcher at Riga Technical University. And today's topic is about self-heating of hybrid thin ply laminates. In this introduction part, I will give a brief introduction why to use hybrid thin ply laminates. Then also I will write an objective study and explain in detail the experimental test program, the test setup, and then a lot of experimental results showing different effects of the layup, for example, ply thickness, maximum strain level, loading frequency and load ratio. And the presentation will end with conclusions and future work. So thin ply laminates have been around for a decade or even more. There's a huge interest to apply them in many different applications, as they have been shown to have increased resistance to micro damage and shown in other nice presentations today. So they have become attractive in applications where microcracking is not permitted, for example, in cryogenic fuel tanks, also one of the hot topics of today in composites research. However, there is this drawback of brittleness of the ultimate failure, since the microdamage evolution is delayed. Then you have all damage at once and the failure becomes more brittle, which is not good. So then hybridization has been also shown in the literature by some fellow researchers as a means to increase this brittleness, decrease the brittleness and possibly even obtain quasi-ductile behavior. However, there is a problem with this that I have also experienced personally, is that characterization of and monitoring of damage state in these ultra-thin laminates is becoming increasingly challenging. You no longer see the cracks clearly, you need to load the specimen, you need to use advanced techniques such as micro-CT, which are nice but not always accessible, and so on. So the present study as an alternative suggests or explores the possibility of self-heating tests during cyclic mechanical loading as a potential method for monitoring behavior and probably evaluate damage state in hybrid thin ply laminates. And of course, there's another practical application of such study. There are, of course, some applications where high-frequency loading is relevant, and also in terms of multifunctionality of these materials. For example, in flexible electronics, there have been some examples where thin carbon and glass fiber composite are made to perform functions like glass fibers performing insulation, electrical insulation, and the carbon fibers are performing like heat sink properties. So a lot of different aspects, but the main part of the work the objective of this work is to analyze the self-heating behavior of hybrid thin ply laminates during cyclic mechanical loading. So to do this study, there are tasks. Of course, we want to develop a robust manufacturing methodology to produce these different hybrid thin ply plates. Then we want to build a test setup which can, with high accuracy, obtain these thermal images during the self-heating process, and then we want to do this parametric study of these different parameters which affect the self-heating behavior. And so, just to briefly go through manufacturing, it was done by Dry Fabric Stackup in collaboration with Rice, which are very experienced in this thin ply composite manufacturing. So we used carbon fiber materials from Oxion and glass fiber from Interglass, and epoxy resin from Hansmann. The plates were cured 80 degrees for 8 hours. These are the layups. Apart from the two reference materials, which are shown on the left-hand side, we have these six different hybrid layups. They all have the same, they should have the same elastic modulus, since they have the equal amount of carbon and glass fiber layers. But then they have different arrangement. They have different. We have different kinds of layers on the surface, and then we have also different combined thickness of these layers. So, and well, the average ply thickness of them of a single ply is around 100 micrometers. So. Now, regarding the test setup, so we did the self-heating test. So. Before doing the cyclic test, we did the static test just to determine the stiffness so that we can perform cyclic test in load control, and then we know the load levels which correspond to the exact strain levels that we are targeting during this cyclic testing. So we used the Instron E10000 electropulse machine, which is able to achieve relatively high frequencies. We went up to 30 Hertz loading. And we used a high-resolution thermal image imaging camera from FLIR with a thermal image acquisition frequency of 5 Hertz. And totally, the experiment was relatively short, just to be able to study all these effects that we are investigating. And then in terms of number of cycles, so it's from 10,000 to 15,000, depending on the frequency. So we had the same test time for all experiments, and if there were, let's say, the higher frequency, then we could do more cycles in this time frame. And then the test is ended with the static loading, where we keep the specimen unloaded in a displacement control. So this is the test setup. Just a few words more about the equipment. So as I mentioned, we went from 20 to 30 Hertz in different experiments. The load is limited to 10 kilonewtons. Unfortunately, we cannot go to very high strains. Well, 0.8 is the maximum we went. And regarding the thermal imaging camera, this is not a regular handheld thermal imaging camera. This is like a high precision instrument with equipped with microscope lens. With obtaining high-resolution images, which allow us even to see the temperature distribution in these layers during the cyclic test. And the tests were started at room temperature, and then we went until after the self-heating, the specimens were allowed to cool down back to room temperature, which is also recorded. Then the images were processed using MATLAB software. So. An important part of the test was that we had to spray paint the specimens to remove all the effects of surface emissivity, which if you don't do, introduces a lot of artifacts. But then we processed these thermal images in MATLAB, obtaining average temperature in this frame, which is demonstrated in the middle picture with these dashed rectangle. This is the average temperature of this rectangle was recorded for each time frame, and then to the right hand side you can see the typical curve that we are obtaining during the self-heating experiment. So we have a static test, then we have self-heating, the temperature is increasing, then we stop the cyclic test and the specimen cools down back to room temperature. Now on to results. These are just some typical results to show. On the look on the left hand side, we have temperature as a function of the time, and we can see like from room temperature, we in this for this specific layup, as you run the cyclic test, the temperature increases, and with the different strain levels, of course, you have higher increase of temperature. But in most cases, we compared the results as shown on the right hand side with a delta T, which is an increase of temperature compared to the, let's say, initial temperature, since the room temperature varied a few degrees during the whole test program. Now more onto the effects. So here you can see all the six different hybrid layups, and the effect of the strain level is shown, so you can see the gradual increase. The higher the strain level during the cyclic loading, the higher is the temperature increase. And what it seems from these tests, which are at 20 Hertz, that this increase is linear. It will be also confirmed later in more specific graphs. And now if we move to the next slide, this is already 25 Hertz. We have less data for this, only three strain levels, but we can see some deviation from the linearity. So at 30 Hertz, we seem to have already some nonlinear increase. It's larger than from 20 to 25 Hertz. And then what we see at 30 Hertz is that you have significant increase of self-heating temperature, and most notably for those thicker layups where we have thicker carbon and glass fiber layers, and the highest increase of temperature during this test was actually obtained for the layup where you have the thickest glass fiber layers on the surface layer. If we compare different layups at the same loading conditions, also a common trend emerges. This is at 20 Hertz, and also for the other frequencies, the layups with the thicker layers, especially with the glass fiber thicker layer, show the highest temperature increase. And this is a systematic trend also at 25 Hertz tests, and also for 30 Hertz tests, where we can also see this most notable increase. So something really happens at these 30 Hertz at the maximum strain level, 0.8%. But the common trend is that those thicker layups, thicker layer clusters result in higher temperature increase. Regarding the linearity with respect to the strain level at 20 Hertz, we can see more or less linear behavior. But as we increase the frequency to 25 Hertz and even to 30 Hertz, especially for those thicker layups where the layers are in like clusters, we see the most nonlinear behavior with respect to the maximum strain level. Separately, we can also look also at the effect of loading frequency, which is the same data only observed in a different kind of axis. We have the same trend for all frequencies with this trend that I already highlighted before, that at 30 Hertz we have the most notable increase of temperature for those thickest layups. So, and finally, with respect to the load ratio, it's also an important parameter because that is the amplitude of the strain that the specimen is subject during this self-heating. And it's a significant parameter, and also here, well, we can just confirm the same trend and see, show the significance of the load level, of this load ratio. And well, especially at these 30 Hertz data, we can see the most notable. So it's the same maximum strain level, but because of the say load ratio difference, you can have significant differences in self-heating behavior. So, and if we look at these lower load ratios, or say where this load ratio is 0.3 and 0.5, then the behavior with respect to the maximum strain level is more linear, of course. So moving on to conclusions. With this setup that we developed, we were able to capture really small differences and systematic trends regarding the self-heating behavior of fiber thin ply laminates. And as expected, visible dependency on maximum strain level, loading frequency, and load ratio was found. More specifically, we found a significant dependency on the layup, although it's the same stiffness and same amount of material. The thickest external glass fiber layer layups were found to have the highest temperature increase, and the most notable deviation from linear self-heating temperature increase was found at loading frequency 30 Hertz at 0.8% maximum strain. Of course, all these experimental results are now processed and compared with some additional experiments. So we do validation, comparison of self-heating with the microdamage state laminates. We want to quantify how much of this depends actually on temperature, and what is the contribution, or maybe also from time-dependent behavior. And so we need also to develop we intend to develop an analytical numerical model to be able to predict all these trends that we observed experimentally for any arbitrary loading case. So finally, just a short acknowledgement of the project funding and Luleå University for assistance with equipment. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think we have time for questions.
What is the mechanism that's causing the differences in the layup on the heating effect?
Yeah, this is what we intend to kind of validate in the future study. That seems to be quite systematic that we obtain that for these thicker layers, although it's the same amount of material, we have systematically higher increase of temperature compared to like layup where the layers are more dispersed. So another point to think about is that we are recording the temperature from the edge, so it could do something with the edge effects, maybe because of different layer thicknesses, but it needs to be verified, and it's interesting, but we don't have the answer yet to explain it with like what is the mechanism really.
So I guess one of the difficulties is that temperature is not really intrinsic. What is intrinsic to the dissipation mechanism is the heat source. And so in a way, your temperature measurements, they are blurred by all the heat losses, so the convection, the conduction. And that's why your curves flatten out. So even if you had a constant heat source, your temperature will flatten out. So it would make you think that you reach a sort of plateau, but still you would have a constant release of energy for time. So there's been a lot of work in deconvoluting this, so inverting the thermomechanical equation to go from temperature to heat source, which then becomes intrinsic. So I would really recommend you look into this. I think there's probably quite a lot of information hidden in these curves. You have a fantastic database. But I think you have to get rid of the problem of the heat losses so that you can go back to the intrinsic parameter, which is the which is the heat source.
Yeah, well, thanks for the comment. Yeah, we actually, in combination with this, we also did tests with external heating where we have actually fixed heat source, and we subjected the same laminates to like constant temperature, so we intend to really compare and basically also characterize all the thermal properties which govern this heat loss behavior.
I think the reason that it's different ply by ply is because of the thermoelastic source. So one of these heat sources that Fabrice is talking about, the ply by ply thermoelastic source will be different, and that will swamp out any of the dissipative source because it's about an order of magnitude greater than the dissipative source. So that's why you're seeing this stripy effect, I think. Just a comment.
Last question, please.
May I? My question is connected to Fabrice's. So what happens if you leave those tests on for a little while longer when you still had a steady rise of temperature? Did you try? Because in a few cases you reported curves where it was a steady growth of temperature.
Yes.
When you stopped the test.
Yes, we were a bit limited in terms of how much we can dwell on each single specimen since we wanted to run the whole parametric analysis. But when we run the tests at lower strains, then of course this curve is like kind of reaching some kind of steady state. When it comes to higher strain levels, then we have this more, let's say, significant effect of self-heating, and then we do not have this yet. So probably with time, it may stabilize, but it really depends on this layup and the material properties and so on. But at lower strain levels, to design the time for each specimen, how long should we do this test, we started with lower strain levels, and we decided that these 500 seconds approximately was the time during which we reached this steady state.
Thank you very much once again.